broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I don't give a damn about my music, and I don't give a damn about you spending
another... No, Omache expressed this kind of contempt, ugness to it.
Do you think he's anti-Semitic?
I think he's an...
When somebody says to the cop, a police officer...
When stubborn inequality still persist in education and health...
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And brother, this is where truth is our bitch. And we'll go anywhere, through the looking glass and beyond. Beyond the actual constraints of what real radio or some people think real radio is, man. I guarantee you listen to this show and there's some nights you don't know whether you're hearing a radio show, whether you've tapped into a party line, whether the CIA put implants in your fillings. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhendryshow.com right now with live streaming audio and video of our show. Downloads available of every single show, an archive to match none or none that match it or something like that. 15 years of archived material. We got it all there at philhendryshow.com. That's the only place, the only adjunct, the only official website of the Phil Hendry Show, and it's worth it because you'll never, ever, ever really get a full taste of this radio show unless you're over there. All right, we've got a number of things to do tonight. We have a As You Like to Hear Them with Mel Gibson. We have a Vernon Dozier, who is a Little League coach whose team was just eliminated from the first round of the Little League playoffs for the United States for the World Series of Little League. And it's an interesting world, the world of Little League. And it's a fascinating world, the world of this road to the Little League World Series. And we just had a story from back east where a father punched out his son and the fans are going nuts. I mean, it's baseball. So we're going to get into that world. Right now we have Margaret Gray from A Little Bird Told Me from the Dicklin Syndicate hanging on to talk with us about this very disturbing audio, very, very disturbing audio featuring the actor and writer and producer and director Mel Gibson threatening to kill his ex-girlfriend Oksana Grigorieva during a terrifying tape conversation. This was leaked and obtained by RadarOnline.com. Actor Mel Gibson not only admits to hitting the mother of his 8-month-old daughter, Lushie, he also threatens ex-girlfriend Oksana Grigorieva's life twice in these recordings. The arguments appear to be over Gibson's perception that Grigorieva is not a good girlfriend and is, quote, sucking him dry. Here is the first of five clips we have. Mel Gibson is seemingly angry that Grigorieva is not a good girlfriend in this clip.
I don't give a damn about my music, and I don't give a damn about you spending another penny.
Wait a minute. Let's go to cut number one. Sorry.
Stay on this phone and don't hang up for me. I have plenty of energy to drive over there. You understand me? And I will. So just listen to me. Listen to my ranting. Listen to what you do to me.
I didn't do anything to you. You are ruining my life.
You make my life so difficult.
Well, you know what? It's
be a woman that supports me instead of a woman that sucks off me. And just sucks me dry. And wants. Get out of this relationship if you're a good woman and you love me. I don't believe you anymore.
What did he say?
Get out of your has any relationship ever worked with you?
Whoa. Here is Mel Gibson getting so worked up he can't breathe.
You have no soul. You can't give a f-. I left my wife because we had no spiritual common ground. You and I have none. Zero. You won't even try.
You just enjoy insulting me. That's all.
All right. In this clip, Gibson doesn't react well when Grigorieva says he needs to be on medication to control his moods.
You need medication.
What?
You need medication.
I need a woman. Not a little girl with a dysfunctional. I need a woman. I don't need medication. You need a bat my side of the head. All right? How about that? You need a doctor. You need a brain transplant.
Now, here Gibson threatens to come over to where Grigoriva is.
Don't hang up on me.
I can't listen to this anymore.
You hang up. I'm coming over there.
I'll call the police.
What?
I'll call the police.
You. I'm coming to my house. You're in my house, honey.
Yes, but you, honey, don't call me, honey. You just call
You're
me.
In my house.
It's...
So I'll call the police and tell them there's someone in my house. How about that?
You can do that. That's fine.
You. I don't involve the police in anything because I stand up for myself. You're weak. You call the cops.
Now, here Gibson allegedly, I didn't hear it, but in this tape, he apparently admits to having hit Grigoriva.
I don't give a damn about my music, and I don't give a damn about you spending another penny. I'm saving her life.
Yeah, well, you're awful angry for this.
You almost killed us. Did you forget?
Last 3 years ago, gravy train.
You were hitting a woman with a child in her hands. You, what kind of man is that? Hitting a woman when she's holding a child in her hand, breaking her teeth twice in the face. What kind of man is that?
No, you're all angry now.
You're going to get to it. You know what?
Sir.
You're going to answer. One day, boy, you're going to answer.
Huh?
Bear.
What? What? What are you threatening?
Nothing, nothing. I'm not the one to threaten.
I'm threatening. I'll put you in a rose garden, you. You understand that? Because I'm capable of it. You understand that?
So that's Mel Gibson, and that was the tape. We actually auditioned that, Margaret, before we went on the air during our pre-feed with our viewers to our pre-feed. And I don't know if you heard anything.
You know, I did hear a little bit of what you were talking about, Bill, before you went on the air. And I thought that what you were talking about was, I thought it was very sensitive to what Mr. Gibson's going through. But I also thought you were being a little bit presumptuous.
Well, let me tell my audience. I mean, what I was talking about was understanding that kind of anger.
Yes, but what you were saying was that the way you were saying it was that you felt you understood Mel Gibson.
Let me just tell my audience. What I was talking about was I said that I understood that kind of anger, but it doesn't make any. When you get that angry, you no longer have the moral high ground. You can no longer make your point. But I know how I know that kind of anger. He does need medication. There's no question about it.
I know that you're feeling sympathy for him.
And yeah, that's what I feel sympathy for him. I feel more sympathy for her because she was attacked while holding a child. But what I'm trying to say here is that that kind of anger, that kind of rage that some people feel, and in this instance is one man, feeling this rage, and I'm a man who has felt that way. He loses when he loses his temper like that, but I know that he has his reasons for getting angry.
Well, here's my point. I'm not really sure. I think what you're saying is, and I heard you during your pre-show, didn't you say that you and other men watching the pre-feed, you and your listeners, your male listeners.
Some of my male listeners, yeah.
All right. Some of your male listeners, you said you felt that those men were, could relate to Mel Gibson and that they could understand Mel Gibson. And what I was saying to you is, just now, Phil, is you don't understand the pressures that he's under. So while you understand the fact that he gets angry, you don't really understand how much in control he really is there.
No, but do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I absolutely do.
You understand that I'm not forgiving him and I'm not excusing him. I'm saying I know why he gets angry like that. And
but the mistake you make is when you say, you said you've been angry like that before too. And you also said...
Well, yeah, that's how I feel.
You also said that your listeners, a lot of your male listeners, have been that angry too, didn't you?
I'm assuming that a lot of men listening to me, or at least a lot of men out there, have been that angry as well. Yeah.
Well, that is where I think you make your mistake, because you've never been really as angry as a Mel Gibson, because Mel Gibson or anyone in the kind of high pressure work that he's in, because Mel Gibson is at a different level. Now, this is not to say he's a better man than you.
Don't, but did you understand what I was saying? A man being angry at a woman to the point of that kind of rage, I understand it, but I'm not forgiving it, and I recognize that he needs to put a lid on it, and I recognize that he has need for medication.
No, I know that, but you don't know that how in control he really is there. When you say that you understand that, when you say that other men in your audience understand that, I am trying to tell you, Phil, that no, you don't. You really don't.
What don't I understand?
You don't. This is Mel Gibson. You don't understand that if you were under the same kind of pressure that he's under, it would most likely mean some kind of violence. If you were under that kind of pressure.
You're saying the pressure that. What kind of pressure is he under? I mean, I understand he's a movie maker.
Well, I mean, by God, look at what he does for a living. He makes movies, he produces films. He's responsible for hundreds of billions of dollars. He is responsible for the support of, I don't know, 8 or 9 children, a wife, another woman in his life, another child in his life, I don't know how many pieces of property. This is a very high-pressured existence. If you were under the same pressure that Mel Gibson is under, I'm sure he would appreciate what you're saying about understanding him, but you really don't. And I think that's the message here that men need to get. While you may relate, and I think that's what you're saying, Phil, you're relating. Isn't that what you're saying?
Well, if I say that I'm relating, what's the difference between that and understanding?
You can't understand because you are not him. You can relate to that level of frustration, maybe. But you have never experienced it quite the way Mel Gibson does. If you had, you most likely would be in a jail cell. And I think that that's a very, very important thing to bring up, Phil. I'm not putting down you or your male listeners at all, but I'm saying the pressure that Mel Gibson feels is very, very intense. It is of a very high, I don't know what the word is, it's a rarefied air. It is a very highly calibrated kind of pressure that most men would probably succumb to a violent instinct. And I dare say there would have been a homicide or a double homicide.
So in other words, if I'd been under the same pressure that Mel Gibson was under, I'd kill somebody.
You or a lot of the men listening to you, that doesn't make you a bad man. It means you really can't say, I understand Mel Gibson. You really can't say that.
You're telling me that I can say I relate, but I can't understand. What I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to communicate to the audience a little bit of, which I don't think there's any out there today, a little bit of, maybe a little bit of sympathy for Mel Gibson. I'm not trying to excuse the guy. He's out of control. He is a complete and total wreck there. But there are reasons why people get that angry.
There are reasons why Mel Gibson gets that angry. There are reasons why Phil Hendry gets as angry as he does. There are reasons why many of the men listening to your program right now, why they get as angry as they do. But you and the men in your audience cannot really relate to Mel Gibson. That's why it's sad, because I believe you when I hear you say that you understand him, that you want to understand him. But you really don't. Mel Gibson is dealing with a lot of anger there that would break most men.
What do you mean break? Are you talking about most men would
most men would succumb to a violent, some violent episode, yes.
Most men?
I dare say any man that is not used to the kind of pressure that Mel Gibson's under, yeah. So that's why you really can't say, I understand Mel Gibson. What he's living through there would break you over its knee. And Phil, you know that I admire you as a man and as a professional. But what Mel Gibson's going through, the very sexy, beautiful model with his baby, sexy, beautiful wife with his children, the multi-million-dollar homes, the multi-million-dollar career, that would break you, it would snap you in half over its knee.
It would snap me in half over with...
With your temperament, yes, and the other men listening.
So we can't really say we relate to Mel Gibson?
No. I don't think so, no.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. I don't know. Well, you know, I brought it up during the during our pre-feed that, you know, I understand that kind of anger, but you can't let that happen because you just lose all the moral high ground. You lose everything. And as well he should. But Margaret is saying to me that Mel Gibson, his anger is in a class and a world all its own. And, you know, I don't know what that's like. No man listening to me right now knows what it's like. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. As we listen to Mel Gibson, is he under some kind of pressure? Is he under some kind of strain? Is he under some kind of onerous emotional pressure that really the general public just cannot relate to and therefore cannot judge? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, and, well, that music just goes away, doesn't it, man? It just, boom, it's gone. It's just, boom, it's just gone. Affiliate Spotlight, Cincinnati, WQRT 1160, in Brawley, California, KROP 1300 AM. 877-876-PHIL. Margaret Gray on the line with us, talking with us about Mel Gibson and this latest collection of audio, this latest collection of tapes. That this is all stuff that's getting leaked, and I can't imagine, Ms. Gray, that this is making Mel Gibson very happy.
Well, I don't know whether it bothers him. I think that it is. I think it's material that really is relevant to their custody case. I think Mel knows that when it comes to this sort of thing, the general public is interested in the private lives of the people that they follow, but it's not going to affect. I don't think it's going to affect whether people go see his films.
You don't?
No, not at all.
I mean, you're listening to a guy here. Listen to this guy as he just almost comes unglued, talking here, angry that she's not a good girlfriend.
Stay on this phone and don't hang up on me. I have plenty of energy to drive over there. You understand me? And I will. So just listen to me. Listen to my opinion. Listen to what you do to me.
I didn't do anything to you.
Pain in the ass.
You are ruining my life.
You make my life so difficult.
Well, you know what? It's
you be a woman that supports me instead of a woman that sucks off me. And just sucks me dry. And wants. Get out of this relationship if you're a good woman and you love me.
What?
I don't believe you anymore.
What am I? What did you say?
Pick up your has any relationship ever worked with you? No!
I got to laugh at that.
Well, you do have to laugh at it. And that's why I think a lot of people, Mel Gibson fans especially, are going to say that that is Mel Gibson, that is the Road Warrior, that is the Mad Max, and that really is the actor that they have come to know. Now, when you talk about the reality of that anger, Phil, again, the audience knows, I think, in instinctively what I don't. And that is that Mel Gibson is under a lot of pressure.
And all right, he's under a lot of pressure. What I said before, and I'll give our number out here, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, because we want to take some phone calls, too, for you, Margaret, on this topic. Mel Gibson, I'm simply saying, I tried to say that I understood that level of anger because I felt that Mel Gibson was a guy who has a wiring problem mentally, you know.
Yes, even though you say you understand, you don't, though. Even though you were saying...
I'm saying that the guy has a mental problem having to do with wiring, and he needs medication.
I know what you think you understand, but as long as you are you, and as long as the men in your audience are the men in your audience, you're never really going to understand Mel Gibson. Not the way you need to if you really want to get what this man is going through. This is a world of pressure that you just don't know. And I appreciated the fact, Phil, that you were trying to be sympathetic, but you're missing the mark by 100 miles.
Missing the mark by 100 miles.
Well, Phil, the point is that he's Mel Gibson. And as angry as you've ever been at a woman, you're not Mel Gibson.
No, but I've been that angry is what I'm saying, and I can't say I understand that.
No, you can't.
Even if there are men out there who've been that angry, they can't say they understand that.
No, they can't, because that kind of pressure that Mel Gibson is under, and the pressure that you're under...
Well, you said would break me over its knee.
You would have wound up killing her and the infant. You would have wound up killing an infant.
877-876-PHIL. All right, we'll be back with your phone calls and Margaret Gray here on Mel Gibson, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Margaret Gray on the line with us. Take some phone calls on the Mel Gibson situation. You know what's tough to relate to, I can understand, is any man getting that angry. And this guy is pissed off here. Mel Gibson, in a series of new tapes that were released by Radar Online, they got a hold of him how, we don't know. He's an angry, angry guy here. Here he is getting so worked up that he has a hard time breathing.
Enjoy insulting me. That's all.
So that guy is, that's an angry guy.
That is an absolutely angry man, Phil. And I don't think you really, when you say you know that kind of anger, what does that mean?
I've been that angry before. I'm not forgiving it. All right.
And when you say that other men in your audience have been that angry before, are you sure you want to speak for them? Because that is the kind of anger that only I think Mel Gibson can handle. And he can handle it. But he needs to be able to handle it his way and not have the general public, talk show hosts and so forth, saying, oh, well, I understand. And
well, don't you think most talk show hosts are taking her side? I mean, I'm not even taking his side. You know.
Well, it sounds to me like you are.
No, I'm not taking his side at all. I'm saying simply that that kind of anger can never be excused, even though I understand where it's coming from.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. I'm saying the best thing you can do for Mel Gibson is to let him get through this himself and not pretend like you know what he's going through.
I believe you there, you know, but, you know, I'm not trying to say that that I'm him.
Well, that's good. Of course you're not him. Of course you're not him.
I mean, but the average guy who gets angry at a woman...
They aren't Mel Gibson either, Phil. You are doing serious damage to yourselves and to Mel, when you say, oh, well, the average guy. No, the average guy, Phil, wishes in a lot of ways he had Mel Gibson's situation. He wishes that...
Well, I don't think he wishes that he's got a woman he's got to pay for, another woman he's got to pay for, all kinds of community property to split up.
What does the average guy know about that, having enough money to deal with that? That's what I'm saying.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. I don't want to get into that. I don't know what the hell the guy's got. Here is Spencer in Los Angeles listening to KTLK. Spencer, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, hi. How you doing? I just want to
good,
say
sir.
That I agree and I do understand Mel Gibson. I'll take his side. Any real man that's ever been in love and cared about his woman and his own woman only, when he feels betrayed, not cared for, disrespected, that rage will drive him insane. He's not a bad man. If he was, he'd have done this before.
Well, he needs medication. I think we all know that.
No, all of America is medicated. We teach our people now that we need to be medicated, and that's not true. We need to learn to stand on our feet and be human beings again.
Have you been to the Olympics? You've seen the Olympics, haven't you? You've been to the track and field?
Sure I have. That has nothing to do with Mel Gibson.
Hold on. Do you know the event where they throw the hammer?
Yes.
Can you imagine that same thing done to an infant? Because that is the kind of rage that that man is expressing there.
Doing what?
Throwing an infant like a hammer.
Throwing an infant like a hammer?
That's right. This conversation has nothing to do with an infant, a hammer, the Olympics, or anything else. This is about
that
Mel Gibson.
That is what Mel Gibson would do to that
mama.
Baby.
No, you just said that Mel Gibson wouldn't. I'm talking to the lady now here, Spencer.
The lady.
I mean, Margaret, I'm talking to you. You just said to me that Mel Gibson can handle this kind of pressure. Me, Phil Hendry, I can't.
You, Spencer, I don't think the average man can handle the kind of pressure that Mel Gibson is living under.
There's no such thing as the average man, and there's plenty of men out there that's been in this situation with that type of pressure, and they never made it to the radio or to the media simply because they aren't Mel Gibson. They're just a regular Joe Blow that gets upset, gets angry at their woman, and that's it. My father was that way.
Oh, God, man. Yeah, but it was scary as a kid. Yeah, my dad got that angry, too. But when you're a kid, you hide from it. And then you grow up, and you become just like that.
That's what I'm trying to say. Neither one of you guys knows what Mel is going through. Why do you keep pretending like you do? Mel, Bill, I didn't mean to say that Mel was going to throw that infant like a hammer. I meant you would.
Who
and
would?
Spencer would.
No, I wouldn't.
Spencer would.
No, I wouldn't. I've been there.
Yes, you would.
What are you talking about?
You know the hardest thing for a man to do is to walk away from a woman that he's in love with?
That takes courage. That takes strength.
You know what, Margaret? Margaret, your interrupting is going to cause that kind of rage that you say Mel Gibson's capable of.
You're going to get that angry at me?
I'm saying that you don't shut up and listen. And this gentleman is talking.
You accuse Mel Gibson of throwing a baby like a hammer.
You brought it up.
No, you said that.
I said that that's what the two of you would do.
No, you don't
and
even
I think,
know
you know
me,
something.
Let alone knowing Mel Gibson. How could you say that about me?
Because
it takes a real strong man to walk away.
I know the pressure Mel Gibson's under.
How
it
would you know that?
Half
you
a man.
Did you throw a hammer? Did you throw a baby?
Yeah, I threw a baby, all right.
Well, then
I
you
threw
know
one.
How
eight,
to talk
8 pounds, 20 ounce. 8 pounds, 20 ounce.
I didn't say bring one into the world. You said throw one.
Darling.
All right, look at Spencer, thank you. 877-876-PHIL. Do you understand what I'm saying? You brought up the hammer throw.
I'm saying that's what an average man would have done with that kid. An average man, Phil, would have awakened with a ripped T-shirt and blood all over his mouth. And a baby somewhere hundreds of yards away. You don't know what you would do. Mel Gibson was in control, as frightening as it sounds.
No, he wasn't. And I'm telling you, I know that kind of anger. No, he wasn't. Courtney in Mobile, Alabama, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Margaret Gray. Courtney, go ahead, please.
Hey, Phil. I was just listening to your show, and as a woman, as a woman's point of view, I can kind of sympathize with Mel Gibson because I've had anger in that situation, too. You know, I think anybody can relate to anger. It doesn't matter if you're an actor or what.
With who? Anger with who?
Hello?
My wife? Hello? You there?
Yes.
Hi, this is Margaret.
Margaret.
Have you ever seen the hammer throw?
Have I ever what?
Seen the hammer throw in the Olympics.
I guess my phone's messed up. I guess I need to hang up.
Yeah, I'm asking, have you ever... You've watched football before, haven't you, Courtney?
I've been angry, and I've never been hit before, ever.
Have you ever watched football? Have you watched football?
What are you
asking? Have I hit?
Have you watched football? Good God, is she deaf? Have you watched football?
All right, never mind. Courtney, dear, I know that you're traveling, and I know you probably have a very tough phone to listen on. 877-876-PHIL. What are you asking her?
I wanted to know if she'd ever watched football before, and I wanted to know if she ever saw the quick release of Dan Marino. And then I wanted to know if she could imagine, instead of a football in Dan Marino's hands, a baby. What does it take to get you people to understand?
Are you out of your mind or something? Are you trying? What do you mean quick release? Suddenly we've got an infant being thrown down the field, being slung down the field, and this is all something that I would do, that my male listeners would do, but Mel Gibson would not do because he knows how to handle that kind of pressure. Are you telling me that this guy here, Margaret, And I don't want you to say anything, okay?
Phil.
No, I don't want you to say anything. Listen, are you telling me that this man here can handle the kind of pressure you're talking about?
You need medication.
What?
You need medication.
I need a woman!
Don't be melodramatic, Phil.
I need
melodramatic.
A woman! I don't need medication. You need a bat in the side of the head.
Wow.
How about that? You need a doctor. You need a brain transplant.
He just said she needs a bat to the side of the head.
No, he was talking about what the average man would do with that infant.
He said you need a bat to the side of the head.
Yes, an average man would do that. He would throw the infant in the air as if he's playing three flies up and swing on it. That's what he's saying, Phil, and that's what he is saying he wouldn't do. But you would. You, under that kind of pressure. And
you know what? What I'm getting from you is I should never become as successful as Mel Gibson because I would kill an infant.
If you had a supermodel for a girlfriend and you had an ex-wife with eight kids, yes.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's move to Kurt. I think it's Kurt in Nashville. Kurt, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Phil, I don't know where you got this woman from.
She is it Cut? What? How do you pronounce your name?
Cut, C-U-T-T.
Go ahead, sir.
This woman is insane. Mel Gibson is under no more pressure than any other guy that's trying to deal with mama, an ex-wife.
Wait a minute. Do you have multiple pieces of property?
That's not the point.
Yes,
that's
it is.
That's not the point.
Because that is financial.
Mel Gibson is under no more pressure than anyone else in the same situation. Okay? He's just throwing a temper tantrum. He's trying to control the woman by telling her what to wear, the whole nine yards. Yes, you might have made him mad, but you're making excuses for Mel Gibson. I mean, he's been doing this for how long? He was with the wife and had how many kids? So
He's having a temper tantrum. Mr. Hendry, though, are you trying to say that you relate to that? Mr. Hendry can't relate to that.
I'm just simply saying that I understood the man's anger. A lot of guys have been angry that way. Okay.
Yeah, but you're trying to make it sound like, oh, I get it. I know where he's coming from. No, you don't. When's the last time you had a supermodel? When's the last time either one of you guys had a supermodel for a girlfriend?
What? I don't understand.
What's that got to do with anything? I mean,
because that's pressure, brother. That's pressure.
That's pressure, huh? Why? Because
that. Oh, it isn't.
No,
you wouldn't. You wouldn't throw a child out into the middle of the freeway to keep her?
Hell no.
Good God Almighty. What are you talking about now?
I'm asking a very good question. Would you take that infant that she had, that baby, that she had with you, in order to keep yourself that supermodel, wouldn't you just slide that kid out into the...
No, go ahead. Slide it.
Wouldn't you slide that child out into the slow lane?
877-876-PHIL. I won't dignify that. I'm sorry. I will not dignify that with an answer. 877-876-PHIL. To keep a supermodel who... I can honestly tell you that. Maybe it's my age. Maybe it's what I've been through in my life. Maybe it's a lot of things. To keep a supermodel, I wouldn't slide anything out to anything. I wouldn't play a game of shuffleboard in the worst bar in town. Slide a baby out into the slow lane. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Margaret Gray on the line, and we're talking about Mel Gibson and this new series of tapes from Radar Online. I say from Radar Online. The point is that these tapes have been leaked, and they have been available to the press. Isn't that a little unfair?
Well, Phil, I think, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Is it unfair? It's a good question. Mel has been through things like this before. The drunk driving that you referenced during the pre-feed. He has been through some embarrassing things. There is no question that he's an angry man. There is no question that occasionally he blurts out the N-word, or he calls a Mexican you-know-what, or he calls the Chinese something. This is Mel Gibson, but let's look at the other side of this. This is the man that gave us quite possibly the most powerful film ever made, The Passions of the Christ. The entire script is done in I don't know what it was. It was in Greek. Wasn't it Greek? Or
It was in the Aramaic, I think, the original language of the people of Palestine. I understand the guy's, genius.
So the point is that he is a very creative man. As creative as you are, you'll never be as creative as Mel Gibson. And so the pressure he's under, and then when you get this eye-candy Russian model with all of the accoutrement that comes with having the Russian model, the Mel, you, I love you, Mel, you know, and she speaks with the accent, and it's exciting for about 5 minutes, and then it wears very thin very quickly. And when she starts to nag, and when she starts to yak and yap, and stands there now not only nagging, but with that downtrodden Russian, that Russian refugee downtrodden look, holding the baby. Mel Gibson is looking, you were talking about 1941, Operation Barbarossa, that's what he's looking at.
He's looking at what?
He's looking at someone standing at the edge of a pit. Okay?
Boy, you know something, and you defend this guy.
I know his spirit.
You just compared him to an SS ready to shoot some Russian.
I know the pressure he's under.
Oh, okay. So it's all right for him to see a girlfriend as a Russian peasant standing at the edge of a pit.
Holding a baby, yes.
Holding a baby. You feel good about that.
Bill, Hollywood has a long tradition.
Oh, don't give me the Hollywood bull crap. People are tired. In Fresno, California. Franz, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I think your guest might need some medication.
Oh, that's a good one. What else you got?
Well, this analogy of the
baby is completely
ridiculous.
Oh, that's a better opening line than your guest may need medication.
Well, I mean, the reality is Mel Gibson is a man when you boil down to it. Everybody feels the pressure in a different way.
His name is Gibson, not Ginson.
He said
yes,
Gibson.
I said Gibson.
Well, do you have an accent or something?
No. What I'm saying, Mark, is every man deals with stress in a different way. It just so happens he's dealing with his issues like every other man. He is not special or different. He's just dealing with frustration and anger.
Well, I don't know. I'm telling you that he is a man who is in a line of business that's a very high-pressure line of business, and I don't think that you or Phil or anyone else can say you understand what it is he's going through. Now, he's got this woman. He's got this other woman. He's got this career. He's got a lot going on, and he has a drinking problem on top of it.
All right, well, that's something that he ought to get under control then and not stand there and excuse this guy's behavior because, what, he's got a drinking problem? You know, because he's...
We know there is something biochemically wrong with him. We know that Mel Gibson needs help.
All right, he may need help, but the first thing that needs to be done here is that girl needs to be protected from him, because if he's on the other end of a phone threatening her while she's holding a baby, as she said... Screaming like a bloody maniac. You heard this guy. We also, by the way, I guess you're happy to know that Mel Gibson has been defended here by Whoopi Goldberg on The View. Why don't we listen to that, Margaret, just so you can get a good whiff.
I don't like what he did here, but I know Mel, and I know he's not a racist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do. He may be a bonehead.
Well, that language certainly sounds racist to me.
Well, again...
Behar is a Jew.
Shut up.
I just want to clear
the point that I want to make out.
Let me finish this, please.
Okay.
Is that you can say he's being a bonehead,
an anus.
But I can't sit and say that he's a racist, having spent time with him in my house with my kids. I can't say it. And so I really just need to say that.
Okay.
You know, okay. I don't like what he's done. Make no mistake.
All right.
Well, didn't you say the other day that you used the N-word, too?
I have when I was angry, yeah.
So, Whoopi's right.
I didn't call the guy a racist. I said the guy's got issues, and he's got a mental problem.
Well, you know something, Phil? There's a song that was done by the Animals, and I don't know how much time you have.
We don't have a lot of time.
Well, let me just remind your audience of this one. And this is Mel Gibson. Do-do-do-do-do-do. You know the song. Hold on. 2, 3, 4. Do-do-do-do-do-do. And then he goes, baby, do you understand me now? Sometimes I feel a little glad. And sometimes, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, when things go wrong, I seem to be mad. And then he says, and I'm just a soul. Oh, Lord. Oh, yeah, here he goes. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. You know that song?
Not that one, no.
Oh, not that one, no. No, you know a better one, right?
Yeah, I do. I know the one the Animals did, yeah. Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Vernon Dozier next, I think, or somebody. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I don't give a damn about my music, and I don't give a damn about you spending it on
it. Do you think he's anti-Semitic?
I think he's
No ownership expresses kind of contempt, ugliness towards...
When stubborn inequality still persists.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Thank you, Margaret, for joining us that first hour on Mel Gibson and what ails him. And I've been told to ask people if they want a version of her singing that. Really? If you want a version of Margaret singing Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, you can listen to the download tomorrow at philhendryshow.com. That is the official website of the Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Go on over there and watch our video cast of the show right now. We've been told, as a matter of fact, that people who say, well, I don't really listen to the radio, you know, and I don't really, and people say, well, you got to listen to Phil Hendry. Well, I don't really listen to the radio. Well, at least watch this. And they'll flip our video cast on, and people are like sitting there staring at this thing for hours. Stunned, yes. Frightened, maybe. But nonetheless, they're watching it. They're compelled. So in order to get our show, you really have to watch our video cast as well as listen to all the downloads, get the archives, get the downloadable archives. In fact, starting tomorrow morning, as we told you, we were expanding our archives. 2001 and 2002 are getting loaded in. As of tomorrow, the entire month of February 2004 is now a download. So now we have 2 months of 2004 that are fully downloadable. And we're going to go all the way back to the beginning and make sure that everything that we have in our archives is available to you, not only as something you can listen to when you want to on the computer, but download it if you want to. That is why our website really is better than any other radio website out there, period. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Vernon Dozier will be joining us. Mr. Dozier is not only a high school football coach, not only a member of the board at Belmar Academy in Glendale, California. He's not only a high school teacher and has worked with kids for many, many years. He's also assisting in coaching the Little League team out there. The, Glendale Coast, I think, is the league, as they get set for the Little League World Series. This is an interesting world, the Little League World Series, and it's one that a lot of us participated in as young boys and maybe some girls out there, too. And the Little League World Series is underway. It will culminate there in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, in August the 20th. Mr. Dozier joins us from Glendale, California, where the Glendale Coast All-Star, at least, team, did not make it past the first round?
We did not, no. And they're good kids. And it was
Where the kids must have been devastated, huh?
You know, it's our, you know, and we put a lot of pressure on them. There's no question about it. I took over coaching the team, Phil, when the very, very good man by the name of Jim Batchelor had a heart attack and was hospitalized and could not continue. Quinn Ewers, the coach of the team. I took over along with Dale Keebler, and I think we did a pretty good job. We got through the first round, and we had, and we felt we had a pretty good shot in the game today, but.
You guys lost. Who did you lose to?
We lost to Simi Valley. Simi Valley, 8-7. And, well, we felt we gave it everything we could. We had a good rally going in the late innings, but we just could not keep it going. And we've got a team of kids, I think, that achieved maybe more than they should have. But I felt they should have achieved more. I put a lot of pressure on the kids. And
how did the parents take it? How were the kids? I know, you know, I remember playing Little League, and you cry when you lose a game.
Oh, yeah. We all did. We all got a pretty good cry, and I think it's been a long time. And I really felt they could go farther, a lot further. I made the decision, and it was entirely my decision because of the pressure that I put the kids under. And it had been a long spring and a long June, and I made the decision that, well, let's go get a case of beer and let the kids unwind, because this is not a natural environment, really, Phil, for a 13-year-old boy.
Now, how old are the kids that you were coaching?
The eldest is 13.
Okay, these little leaguers, major leaguers.
Yes. And the environment of Little League is more and more high pressure. It's not the same as it was when you and I played. I remember the year that I played, Granada Hills went all the way to the World Series.
I think I remember that, yeah. Were you on that team?
No, we lost to Granada Hills that year. We were one of the teams that lost to Granada Hills that year. I played out in South Bay, and so I just felt that the kids deserved it. And I told Jim Jeffcoat, who is one of the fathers that was helping us, and had been in charge of the snacks and things like that, this season. I said, go ahead and get a case of Coors Light and bring it back. Now, the parents reacted in different ways. Some were very angry. Some tried to understand. The parents that I appreciated the most were the ones that came to me and sat down and said, I want to hear your side. I want to tell you my side because I'm a parent, but I also want to hear your side. Those are the ones that I am going to respect and to, lend my, give them my reasons. And but anybody that comes at me like they got their claws out, they don't know me. You know.
Well, Coach, did you say you gave 13, 12, and 13-year-old boys beer?
Yeah, they are 11, 12, and 13. They under complete supervision of myself, Jim Keebler, Jim Jeffcoat, and some of the other parents. And I said to Jeffcoat, go get a case of beer. And let's let these kids unwind for the first time in their lives, because they've been under the kind of pressure that I don't think anybody, not even an adult, should be under.
Well, what kind of pressure were they under? I mean, it's a Little League game. It's a Little League team. Was it an All-Star team, right?
That's how you get to the Little League playoffs, yeah.
All right, so it was an All-Star team. What kind of pressure were they under? I mean, baseball is supposed to be fun. And they're young.
Well, there's nothing really, when you talk about organized sports, Phil, there's nothing really fun in the sense that you mean it, in the sense that I mean it, about organized competitive sports at this level. This is not a pickup game of basketball. It's not a sandlot game. It's not a game of over the line. It's not any of these. It's not a game of stickball. This is organized Little League regional playoff action. And the winner moves on to a higher level, and then you've got travel. And then travel is the same as if you were on a college team, because now you're traveling. What happens when you travel? Well, you have to have curfews. What happens when you have curfews? You've got players that are breaking curfews. I mean, all of that stuff we were looking at. And you have players that are getting involved in things they shouldn't. All that stuff.
With 13-year-old boys? You know,
with 13-year-old boys, with 15-year-old boys, it doesn't matter, because this is a very, very sophisticated and high pressure. I heard you talking about Mel Gibson being under pressure. But I'll tell you, I'd love to be under that kind of pressure. know.
Well, I was talking about that because I wasn't saying that. Margaret Gray was saying that, our guest. She was saying that he was under a lot of pressure because of the multi-million-dollar business that he's in. Now, little leaguers are not exactly under that kind of pressure, are they? They're not under the kind of pressure that he's under.
No, we're not talking about that kind of money, but they're under the pressure of a national television audience. They're under the pressure of parents who expect a lot of them. More to the point, they're under their own pressure. They put themselves under pressure. And then they're under, when they play for me, they're under pressure. Because I know they're young, but I expect out of them the very best. And when they lost, and those boys started to cry, and they were upset, and they felt so down, I said to Jim Jeffcoat,
You went out and got a case of beer for them.
That's correct, yeah.
And those boys drank that.
The kids had, when you say they drank it, Mr. Hendry, I didn't stand over them and watch them empty every single can. I said, you boys have earned this.
And do you expect them to go out and start drinking beer now?
Of course I don't. It is not legal for them to drink beer.
Well, then what about, this is what I'm saying. You gave them beer. There were parents who obviously were upset.
Those are the parents. The parents that came to me and said, I want to hear your side. Those are the ones that I listened to. The parents that came at me like they were going to chew me up and spit me out. You know, they roll right off my back like rainwater, like water off a duck. But the ones that came to me and said, let me first hear your side. I want to know why you feel the way you do. I appreciated that.
And now, the controversy extends because this is now something that the board at Belmar Academy is going to take up. You may not be allowed to coach Little League again.
I don't see that happening. I can tell you this much, Mr. Henry. It isn't so much something that's going to happen to me. It's how is Little League going to evolve? And these boys were under so much pressure that I said, all right, let's go get a case of beer and let's talk about this. The kids needed to talk. They needed to get it off their chest. They needed to sit around and, for the first time in their lives, talk like men and find out what happened, what went wrong after all the planning, after all of the hard work. How could they let this get away? And if they needed a beer to feel a little bit like maybe they can walk this earth like a man for a change instead of like a loser. Because in point of fact, Mr. Henry, they lost in the playoffs for the Little League World Series. And they had a very good team. So do you feel like a loser? Yes. Do you want to feel better than that? Yes. Let them have a beer so they can bark at the moon, get it off their chest.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. World famous Phil Henry Show. We're talking here with Vernon Dozier. Put him on the hold there. As he was coaching one of the Glendale Little League teams that lost in the opening rounds of the Little League World Series playoffs, and as part of the after game, the kids sat around with the coaches and drank a case of beer, which has left some of the parents nonplussed, some of them upset, and the coach says he'll talk to the parents that want to hear his side of it, but he will not talk to the parents that just want to scream and yell at him. 877-876-PHIL. When a kid is under a lot of pressure, even if it's a 13-year-old kid in sports, shouldn't he be allowed to have a beer after the game, after a big game that he loses? A 13-year-old. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Phil Henry Show here from Los Alamitos. We have Vernon Dozier on the line talking to us about his Little League team that was knocked out of the first round of the Little League World Series playoffs. Now, you were talking about giving these kids beer. And you were talking about the pressures that they're under, and you were talking about the difficulty it is for these kids to relax after a game. And in very, you know, in no uncertain terms, you're basically saying that they have the right to relax like adults.
I mean, I think I wouldn't say that they have the right to relax like adults, Phil, all the time. I think in this instance, when you have these young people, and put it together with the fact that they have a high-pressured situation of trying to win the first round, trying to make it up to the quarter and semifinals, just to the regional, and then to the Western Regional and so forth. This is a very difficult thing for a young person playing Little League ball. We do expect a lot of them. We have young people in on our team. We had a very good pitcher by the name of Tyler Hitchcock. I felt so bad for this boy. He's got a, and I shouldn't say this, she may be listening, but I told you, some of these parents, if they want to hear me out, then they can, you know, I'll sit down and talk to them. But if they want to come at me like they know how to coach a baseball team.
But these are the parents of these kids that you gave beer to.
I understand that, yes.
And don't you think that they would have the right to be angry?
Well, you have to listen to what I'm saying, though.
Well, don't you think they would have the right to be? I'm going to tell you right now, Coach, if it was me and it was my son and I found out that you gave my boy alcohol after a baseball game, I'd be angry at you.
Well, you could be angry at him, then I'm not going to talk to you.
You're not going to talk to me? What if I insist on talking to you?
If you want to calm down, I'll talk to you. If you want to sit down and hear me out and have an exchange, we can do that.
What if I'm not interested in having an exchange?
Then you're not going to, you won't find me. I won't be anywhere that you can locate me, you know.
You're going to hide from me.
Like Vernon Dozier didn't hide from anybody. I don't hide from anyone. I'll be right out there, but you just won't be able to find me. I'll be right out there wherever. I'm not going to hide from you. But when it comes to the guidance of a teen athlete, Phil, I know more in these situations than a lot of these parents, and they should listen to me and trust what I can offer these kids. This boy, I'm going to tell you about Tyler Hitchcock, a boy whose mother, and you know what, I wasn't going to mention her name, but your challenge of me has now, frankly, it's angered me. And so now I am going to mention her name. It's Tyler Hitchcock's mom. Everybody knows who she is.
Oh, you're going to blame that on me?
Well, sir.
You're going to blame the fact that you have just broken the anonymity of this family on me. Why?
Mr. Hendry, you said that you'd come at me. And
if you gave alcohol to my son after a Little League game, a 13-year-old, 12- or 11-year-old boy...
even after all the pressure he was under that you put him under.
That I put him under. I would want to talk to you.
Well, good luck finding me.
And yet you say that you would... What do you mean, good luck finding you? I don't understand that.
Good luck finding me. I'm not going to talk to you.
But you don't hide from anybody.
No, I don't. I'm out there for... I don't hide from anyone, Mr. Hendry. I stand right out there in the open. Anybody they want. Want to walk right up to me and look me in the eye. But good luck finding me.
You know, that doesn't make any sense. And
well, what I'm saying is, I'm not going to go out of my way to try to find a guy who wants to make a big problem where there isn't one. Now, this boy I was telling you, Tyler Hitchcock, he's got a mother. And I'm going to say this. This woman's a train wreck. First of all, and I will say this, and I apologize, she's hard on the eyes. Secondly, she is a pushy, I know she's a single mother, but that doesn't give her the excuse to pretend like she's a man and to come out and tell me how to pitch the boy, how to work, you know, when he should pitch, what rotation, where in the lineup. And
she's being like any other parent, giving suggestions. Do you ever just say, I don't want to talk to you?
Mr. Hendry, I'd be happy to do that, but this woman, I told you, the woman is a train wreck, and this is not unique. As a coach, you deal with this all the time. You try to give the best you can to these parents, but they test your stamina, they test your will to live. While I'm trying to help their kids, while I'm trying to help their children be the very best they can be, the parents test my very will to live. And I think that's something people need to understand.
877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to a phone call here. Tim in Las Vegas. Tim, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Vernon Dozier. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I can't believe this guy's for real. All he's doing is teaching a kid at 12, 11, 12, and 13 that the quickest way to cope with losing is have a beer. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
That's not true. That's not true. What I'm doing is... No, sir. What I do after this very, very big game, this was a big loss. This is the biggest loss these boys had ever encountered. They'd been been under a lot of pressure all through the season, all through the last couple of seasons. And, yeah, one time I said, go get a case of beer.
Sir, I coach all-stars. I've coached Little League. I've coached club ball teams. I've coached high school. I'm going to give my high school players a beer after they lose a ball game. It's just ridiculous. A 13-year-old, it's not. I mean, that's not fair for you to make that call. You know, that's not fair for you to make that call. If my son's out there playing and you give him a beer, to me, you just taught my son, hey, the way to cope with losing is have a beer. And what's that going to lead to? A bunch of alcohol?
They see their favorite. No, you know as well as I do, sir. They see their favorite players on TV when they win the championship. They're, you know, they got a bottle of champagne, and they have a beer. And
you know that they don't drink that champagne anymore. They just spray it around the clubhouse.
They're 11 and 12 years old. They're still very, you know, skeptical.
No,
they're not old enough to make a decision.
I understand that, but they're saying to me is they're.
I've never given my baseball players beer, ever.
You may never have done it, but that necessarily doesn't mean that it's not a good idea, especially when these boys want to talk. They want to go back over the experience and find out where they went wrong. And what better way to do that than to have a beer, to sit down and let it out?
13-year-old kids having a beer, let it out? You're talking about these guys as if they're experienced adult baseball players who are playing for money, who are playing professionally.
Well, what do you mean playing for money? What's the difference?
The difference is a professional player who plays for money is playing for broke. It's a guy who's playing literally for his future, for his family. He's in a profession, and it's going to be something that he's going to look at with a critical eye. A 13-year-old kid, the only thing he needs to look at with a critical eye is what? I don't know. You know, his grades? His schooling?
So you want to turn him into a P-U-S-S, and I don't think I have to spell the rest of that.
No, that's not what we're saying. 877-876-PHIL. Thank you very much, sir, for your call. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What are you talking about?
Phil Hendry.
P-U-S-S.
To the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Our website, philhendryshow.com. Tomorrow, I'm told, February of 2004, available for download. Every day, every show of February 2004, available for download. In Los Alamitos, California, is Vernon Dozier. He coached the Glendale Coast Little Leaguers. They lost today. It was this past weekend to Simi Valley. They are out of the Little League World Series playoffs. And we're talking about coaching young people. You are very open in saying that you said to one of the fathers, go get a case of beer. What did he say?
John Jeffcoat was amenable to it. He's got a son on our team, and he recognized what we were trying to do. We wanted to give these kids an opportunity for the first time in their lives after listening to these parents. See, here is something I think a lot of people are missing. The parents of these young people are, in many cases, feel so onerous. They are constantly yelling at these kids and screaming at these kids and screaming at me. And the pressure that they get from the mothers are particularly vocal. The pressure and these children are in tears. I've seen them. They'll sit next to me in the dugout and cry. And swear, and I let them use curse words because I said, you don't use that language in front of your parents, but you can go ahead. And like I told you, this one boy, Tyler Hitchcock, his mother is I there's no words to describe it. I can't.
All right, so how does this all figure into giving her son beer?
How does it figure into give? Because when the boy sits there and weeps, like a woman, I've got to give him something that I've got to try to make that boy feel like he's a man, like he can walk the earth as a man and not go home to his mama. Because let me tell you, Mr. Henry, one of the problems we've got with these kids today, and you know it, is that they are overweaned and they are spoiled rotten by their nana. their dada. And I have tried, so if I give a boy a beer so he can go home like a man and not like he's going home to his dada, then that's what I'm going to do.
877-876-PHIL. Boy, you sound very dismissive of the relationship these kids have with their parents. Elaine in Portland, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Vernon Dozier. Go ahead, please.
Hi.
Yes.
Vernon, you should be
arrested. Yes, ma'am.
I would have you arrested. I would call the police and have you arrested if you gave my son beer after a baseball game. If you gave my son, any adult who furnishes alcohol to children should be arrested. And I have a 13-year-old who plays baseball. And you would, A, never, ever coach in this state again. I can't believe that parents would let
I don't
you
know that. I've never heard of one little league team that's ever come out of Oregon that's been worth a pinch of you-know-what. Okay, baseball team out of Oregon that ever does anything.
That's not the point. We're talking about...
I don't care. My kid is there to have fun. And he's having fun. That's
no, ma'am,
point.
This is the Little League World Series. This is the playoffs. This is the playoffs of the Little League World Series. This is serious.
I know.
You say
how wonderful that you made it there. But making it there should be the accomplishment. The fact that they didn't get any
that's
farther.
Your opinion. That's your opinion.
Yeah,
that's your opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
But I would
coach,
have you that because what you're doing
well, what are you going to have me?
It's illegal. It is illegal to furnish children with alcohol. Don't you know that?
Illegal where?
Adult knows that.
Illegal where? Illegal where?
Illegal.
If you give a kid,
I don't know. Phil,
if you give a kid alcohol, have you ever had alcohol in your home? Have you ever given it to your daughter or your son for a birthday or anything like that?
No.
Well, some parents do. Some Italians do, as a matter of fact.
Sister.
Are you going to have Italian parents? Are you going to have Italian parents arrested because they give the kids wine? Yeah,
I
didn't think so.
Parents' choice.
Well, what I'm saying is,
it's not some guy at a field, at a baseball field, that
might
have been for 3 to 4 months.
I'm willing to bet that your kids have already drank. I'm willing to bet that. Yeah,
whatever.
You're laughing about it because you know it's true.
That's not the point.
You're laughing because you know it's true. I'm willing to bet that.
Well, why don't you address the point if they had you arrested?
I'll talk to parents that want to talk to me. I'm not going to talk to somebody. This woman here, she thinks it's funny that kids drink.
No, I think what you are is funny and hilarious.
I'm listening to you, ma'am.
I think that you're
I'm listening to you, and you're, this is you. This is you.
You should never, ever, ever coach a child again. You should not be around children. There are rules
I don't like
people like you.
I don't like, can I tell you something? I don't like women laughing at me.
You don't like women,
I'll tell you what.
It sounds like, at all. You call
Where'd
the
you
other
get that?
Train wreck, and she's not good to look at. It's like, what the hell does that matter? Her kid playing on your team is enduring and helping her child. What you're doing
she goes running. She's running out onto the field. She's telling me how to coach. She's telling me this and telling me that. She's a train wreck.
No,
everybody's
parents,
looking at her and going, oh, man.
No, parents shouldn't run on the field. But you're telling the people that her kid's crying like a woman. But you obviously don't like women.
You pick everything apart, don't you? Everything that I say.
All right, look, and you did say all of those things, and Elaine, you're right. You have not yet addressed, and thank you very much for your call, you haven't addressed the legality of this.
I understand, Mr. Andrew, there's a question, but I'm also telling you that sometimes, even if you run the risk of running afoul of the law, you have to do something to help these kids. You've got to do something to help these kids. Because this one boy, Tyler Hitchcock, his mother goes running out onto the field. She's a train wreck. Now, you're laughing, too.
No, how many times are you going to say this about this kid's mom? Hard on the eyes, a train wreck. Here is Angelo. Angelo, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Coach. I think these kids deserve better leadership and a better opportunity than you. I'm a combat veteran. I'm a high school wrestling coach for 5 years, and I have never once even considered offering alcohol to a kid. You kids have they get to state finals, they have tough matches all the time.
Right.
They're disappointed.
Right.
Alcohol is not the way to not the example to set these kids. Oh yeah, have a beer. Yeah, this will make you a man. That is ridiculous. Just
can I tell you something? Can I tell you something, Mr. Henry? And I'd like to tell this gentleman something too. The other day they had on the The other day they had on the TV this deal, this World Cup. I'm sure, did either one of you gentlemen see that?
I didn't, no.
All right. Guess what the Netherlands coaching staff was doing the night before until about 1 o'clock in the morning, drinking in a bar.
Yeah, and they lost.
Okay, hold on.
They need strong adult leadership.
Yeah.
What those kids needed after that game.
What did you say, Henry?
What did I say? They lost.
A good example.
All right, Angelo, hold on. What did you say, Henry?
I said Netherlands lost.
So what? They were in the World Cup. You ever heard of it? WORLD, World. That's not America. That's not... And what does this gentleman say, Angelo?
Yes, sir.
Are you listening to anybody? Angelo was saying they're 13-year-old kids. They're not the Netherlands coaching staff drink until 1. That's the coaching staff, by the way. That's not the players.
What they need is a strong adult example of doing the right thing, showing them how to stand up like a man without alcohol, showing them how to stand up like a man.
That doesn't help them win. That doesn't help them win. You know, you're teaching them how to lose. I'm going to teach them how to. You're teaching them how to lose. I want them angry. I want them angry, sir.
National runner.
Don't you want those boys angry and ready to? Don't you want those kids angry after a loss and ready to tear it up the next time? Of course you do. I want my boys angry.
You don't have to.
And the best thing to make them angry is to give them a few beers.
The best thing to make them angry and get them ready is say, guys, we'll start back up next week. We'll be back ready, and we'll be back in there. But you do not get kids out at all. They deserve better than
that. That's not getting them angry. You're not getting them angry by saying, come on next week and let's start back. That doesn't do anything. Get them angry. Get them so mad. Give them a beer and let them throw something out of a window. Yes, I said it. Let them throw something out of a window.
That's right. That's ridiculous. Angelo, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Ron on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, was this guy picked on as a kid? I mean,
how about it?
Did you do it? Have you ever won anything in your life? Yeah, I've talked to
you. Talking to me?
Have you ever won anything in your life?
I've won
your
a lot.
Ego just
That's
so
why
big
this is my method. This is my method. I've won a lot. I've won 5 state Division V championships. All right.
With what age group?
High school football.
High school.
Yeah. Yeah.
High
football.
School. Little bit older than 13, huh? Little older than 12 and 13.
Look, I know my business, sir. And my business.
I don't think so. I think you got an ego you just can't solve. You're playing for yourself. You're not playing for these kids. You're not trying to
I most certainly am.
You're trying to lift some glory that you never. You tried to lift some glory you never had.
Do you know what the name of our stadium? You know, I don't need that. You know what the name of our stadium is? It's Vernon Dozier Stadium. I've already got my glory.
Oh, you
they
do, called, huh?
They named the stadium after me.
And how many kids do you have?
In the school? Or I don't know what you mean.
No,
how many kids do you personally have?
How many kids do you have?
Biological kids? I don't want it.
Is there any other way?
And I'll tell you.
Is there any other way?
My kids at school. I teach classes. I teach juniors and seniors. I've got my football team. I've got my science club. I've got all kinds of kids. Kids that I care about.
They're not your kids.
Kids that I care.
They're loaned to you.
When a kid comes to me bawling because his mother's a train wreck, when his mother's a train wreck, what do I do?
What is with the train wreck thing?
This kid comes to me. His father is a P-U-S, and you can spell the rest. His mother is you got to wear. You know, I would say something to you, sir. You ought to have a boy at 13 sit down next to you in the dugout.
I've got 2 sons, sir.
It's rough.
Both of them in the military now. Both of them played college ball. They didn't come home worried about whether they won or lost the game. They knew they were winners all the time. Every day they were a winner.
What does that mean, they were winners? Winning at what?
They weren't losers because they lost a game. They lost plenty of games. It's how the people treat them. It's how adults treat kids that turn them into losers. And you're the one that's turning these kids into losers.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to make them feel like men. Give them a beer.
My kids played at Washington State, sir.
In what?
Football.
Well, I have no way of knowing whether you're telling the truth or not.
Well,
I can tell
that you don't have an ego at all, do you?
I've got a big ego. I got a big ego. There's no question about it. Any kid that embarrasses me is going to wish that he had
15 years old. If I was one of these, sir, to pour some beer down a kid's throat to get him to man up. If I was one
get
of these
him to
parents,
man up.
You would,
that's right.
You would be in jail. If I was one of these parents, you would be in jail. Or
I go to
would
jail.
Be in jail.
All right, that's fine. I go to jail and your son hates you. Okay, fine.
Why would his son hate him?
Because the son knows who was right. He knows Coach was trying to help him. And his father put Coach in jail. Okay, great. Fine. That'd be the last time you and I ever talked.
Well, whatever. Listen, thank you very much for your call, Brent. 877-876-PHIL. Uh-oh. Yeah. Well, I don't know who we were talking to, but it was somebody.
It was a guy named Brent.
Was it?
Yeah. Phil, I just want to clear up one thing. Yes, if you want to call the police, you can put me in jail. But as I said to that last man, there'll be a whole bunch of young boys watching me get thrown into a squad car, maybe even hogtied face down, and they'll be on my side. And they'll turn around and look at their parents, and they'll be thinking the thoughts that only those little kids in Village...
You all right?
They'll be thinking thoughts that only those little kids in Village of the Dam could think.
All right, we'll be back with Coach Vernon Dozier, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Forgive me.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. Vernon Dozier with us for the last few minutes. What is the... I need the answer to the question, Mr. Dozier, as we are talking to a lot of parents here about you giving alcohol to 13 and 12 and 11-year-old little leaguers to help them, quote, man up, to help them feel like men. What is your legal rationale?
Henry, I had explained this to you earlier.
Well, I don't believe you had.
Then allow me, please, to do it again, sir. If you take a child to a movie theater, you are allowed to take that child into an R-rated film if there is an adult present. So it's R-rated means 18 or over unless accompanied by an adult. In the serving of a cold, well, I can't believe you. You're one of these guys, you wouldn't let a man have a cold beer?
I'm asking you about giving it to 13-year-old.
If there is an adult present, you're accompanied by an adult.
You can't take a kid into a bar and drink a beer.
No, you can't do that. But if you buy it, if you fly, you buy. Now, you've heard that term, right?
Yeah.
All right. The kids will say, you fly, or rather, yeah, you fly, we'll buy. The kids had ponied up something like $30, and I looked at them, and I said, what's going on? They said, if you fly, we'll buy. And I said, all right. And that's when Jeff Goldwyn got it. Now, Mr. Hendry, I was with the Mackay Indian in Washington State. I went out with them when they went whaling. Now, the Mackay Indian obviously has some very ancient traditions that go back hundreds of years. Well, I got something to tell you, and I'm going to say this to all the people out there that think they know all about Indians. Guess what? I went out with them, and they had a .50 caliber. That's how they aced that whale. They put a whale on ice with a .50 cal, and I loved it. I loved it. You know why I loved it? Because that's evolution. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Well, you like the fact that the Mackay Indian uses a .50 caliber to kill a whale, so that means we've evolved to the point where we give kids beer.
Not kids beer. The kid that's been in the Little League World Series.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Keith in Louisville, Kentucky. Keith, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Vern, you need to quit coaching, and here's why, buddy. Your era has passed. It's passed. There was a time in this country when, you know, a 7-year-old kid could walk up and buy a pack of cigarettes. The world doesn't agree with that anymore. You've already said, you know, they got Vernon Dozier Stadium, they got all this.
Yes, they do.
Retire.
Yeah.
Stop. This is not the way we do things in this country and in the world today.
So
you know,
we don't win
the 13-year-old kids
you.
Do
I'm,
not need
right,
to feel like a man.
We don't
what
win
they
anymore.
Need
all right,
is they
I'm
need
glad
to
you told
someone
me.
To, They need someone to teach them to hone their skills, work as a team, and, hey, if they lose, learn how to deal with that loss.
I got a great idea. How about if we just not keep score, too? They're doing that now at the T-ball level. Why don't we just do that through all the – why don't we do that? Why don't we
What's
just
that?
Turn into a bunch of – why don't we just turn into a bunch of, you know, silly – oh, sir, you want everybody you don't want to keep score. You want everyone to kiss and make up after a ball game. I want my kids mad. And what's the best way to get them angry?
Burn your
– after their first beer.
I would say from listening to you talk that you're at least my age. I'm 50. Maybe you're a little older. I would say
I'm 39.
They're not your kids anymore. Step back. Raise some grandkids. But let,
you know,
let
that
younger
is such
people
a, such a cheap
that are more in
that's
touch
a cheap,
in tune
that's a cheap
with
put
the
down
world.
Calling somebody old. You know, that you might as well say that I can't coach because I'm black. Go ahead, say it. That's what you're saying.
I think
yeah,
you can't
yeah.
coach because you're not in touch with the world today, Vern.
You said I'm old, and that's the same thing as saying I'm a Mexican. So, friend, yeah.
Well, how's that? How is that saying it's the same thing as a Mexican?
Because that's ageism. Ageism. Ever heard of it? That's the new one now.
I face it every day, Vern.
And
what I do is accept it.
I don't care about you, sir. You can lay down and die if that's what you want to do. Me? I got a couple of more laughs I'm going to squeeze out of this world. Thank you very much.
Well, I don't think that's what the gentleman's saying. I think he's saying if you want to keep coaching, you got to get in touch with what's happening. And what's happening is, you know, you just aren't teaching kids how to drink beer anymore. Here's Brent in Redding, California. Brent, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, how you guys
doing? I'm teaching them how to drink beer.
Good.
I'm teaching them how to win.
Hey.
All right.
You know, the thing is that, you know, having a beer when you're 13, that's up to a parent. You know, if parents want to parent their kids like that, if they want to give their children beer, that's up to them. You know, you overstep some bounds by doing that. And the most
I gave a kid a beer. What about the kid whose mom's a train wreck?
Excuse me, sir. The most disturbing thing is how righteous you seem to feel about it. You know, you've got stadiums in your name. I'm sure you're a great coach. But this doesn't give you the right to give children beer, you know, or whatever else you like to do. You know, it's not right.
When you reach a certain level, when they name the ballpark after you, you are entitled to certain things that others are not entitled to.
You are not entitled to that.
Even giving a kid a beer.
No, you are
not entitled
to that.
All right, then what's it mean to have a stadium named after you? I'll tell you what. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
Thank you, sir. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back.
Where are you hung up?
No kidding. Is that what that was?
Phil Hendry.
I'm disgusted.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
No ownership expressed this kind of contempt. Ugness to it.
When stubborn inequality still persists in education.
I don't like what he did here, but I know Mel, and I know he's not.
What? I need a woman!
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This is the groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show where truth is our bitch, and we go anywhere to find that. Even through the dimensional membrane.
Yeah.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. And you can go there and you can get the live streaming video of our show as it occurs each and every night. You can watch the live streaming video, listen to the live streaming audio, and get downloads of our show every day, the next day. As well as downloads from our archives happening all the time. You know, everything from 2005 forward in the Phil Hendry Show archive is a download. But now, and you took the call, right, bud?
Yeah, Alex said everything is going to be 2004, February 2004.
So we have 2 months of 2004 now downloadable. That's heavy, man. I don't think there's a radio show anywhere that's doing that, that is making as much material downloadable as our show. And why not our show? The funniest, the greatest, you know. All right. I mean, as we've often said, we've listened to a lot of radio here, and we've, what is the word? We have previewed something. I don't know.
What are you looking for?
We peruse. That's it.
Peru?
Not Peru the country. We've perused radio shows, and this one's the best one. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Now, I wanted to, because I'm very, I said during the pre-show that I had a dream the other night about the cap on the well being successful. I don't remember hearing a story about them trying to cap the oil well. I really don't, but last night I had a dream that I was watching TV, and I saw a man in an underwater suit and this robotic arm, and they were putting into place, fitting into place this thing. And the guy on TV said, and it's successful. They've been able to successfully contain it, right? Well, come to find out that, and now I don't believe that that is a prediction of the future. I don't think that my dream is some heavy-ass prediction of what's going to happen. Dreams, as we have learned, are often simply the subconscious expressing a desire that we don't really express in life. I don't really run around saying, oh, I hope that the cap on the well is going to be, you know, I hope it's going to be okay.
Yeah, you run around saying, oh, please make the cap on the well be good, please, please. Yeah, and then people will, like, have an orgasm. And
you shut up with that, okay? Leave it to you, man. Anyway, so I thought, you know, I had this dream. And so here today, BP appeared to have placed a new containment cap this evening. And I say this evening, Monday night, on its crippled well in the Gulf of Mexico that's been gushing oil since an explosion and fire on April the 20th. Now, that doesn't mean yet that everything is capped. The company hopes the new cap will be able to completely contain the leaking oil, but tests are still needed to determine its effectiveness. Now, we have this late word on just exactly what it is they are hoping will happen. Doug Suttles, who is the company's chief operating officer for exploration and production, said that pressure tests would probably be performed tomorrow, Tuesday, once the new cap was fully connected. During the tests, which could last up to 48 hours, valves on the cap will be closed, and for the first time since the disaster began in late April, the oil should stop leaking, he said. Now, we've heard this before, maybe not in quite those words, but we have heard, or we have allowed ourselves, and perhaps in some instances have been led to believe, that the problem has been controlled. But this is the latest statement from British Petroleum. Doug Suttles, who's the chief operating officer for exploration and production, he said that once the cap is fully connected, they will conduct tests. These tests will last up to 48 hours. Valves on this cap will be closed, and if successful, for the first time since the disaster began in late April, the oil should stop leaking. Video supplied by BP showed robotic arms gingerly lowering the new cap over the well with little oil appearing to escape. But then again, those are the eyes. Those are a layman's eyes, you know.
Who?
A layman, you know.
Who's he?
A layman.
Like a regular guy, man.
I don't know.
A regular, like he said, a regular guy. You and me, we're laymen as opposed to professional.
Oh!
Who's he? Video supplied by BP showed the robotic arms gingerly lowering the new cap. If the new cap does not completely contain oil from the crippled well, some may have to be brought to the surface to wait containment ships. But under a worst-case scenario, there could be new damage to a blowout preventer, whatever that means. This must be some kind of a, quote, prophylactic device. Don't get all crazy, bud. That just means preventative. The tests are due to begin Tuesday morning, according to CNN's Ed Lavandera, and we also heard here from Doug Suttles. The process could take anywhere from 6 hours to 2 days, which Doug Suttles already told us. The Coast Guard said on Monday, scientists will be checking or did check the pressure inside the well and then determining whether the cap is holding the oil in or if crews will need to continue siphoning oil. So what we're seeing, and this is kind of the upside of all of this, we are seeing what mankind has done for hundreds, well, I shouldn't say hundreds of tens of thousands of years. We have coped with a problem. We have found a solution. We've moved forward, you know.
Yeah, but a lot of times there's, we mean, not every time. Sometimes it's radioactive and everything. Yeah.
Sometimes it's radioactive. Are you talking about nuclear weapons?
I'm just saying, you're saying about how mankind cope with it and it's never a bad problem. I disagree about that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say every time that mankind done that.
Yeah, I can.
How can you say that?
Because every time that mankind has dealt with a problem, where are we today as opposed to where were we 10,000 years ago?
What do you mean, where were we 10,000 years ago?
The Indians hadn't come yet.
I'm not talking about physically. I mean, in terms of technology. Have we improved?
Yeah, we got better and everything.
We got more stuff, yeah.
We got more stuff, but also, do we cure diseases we couldn't cure before? Do we treat the homeless? Do you realize that there was a time we used to have the town drunk? And homeless people, you stepped over in the street. Today, we take care of the people who are the least fortunate in our society. We found a way to deal with people who have mental retardation. We found a way to deal with people who have birth defects. We find compassionate ways to employ people. We find ways to, even the least people of our society, we try to lift up somehow. We try to do all of this and remain profitable and successful people. We've drawn along the rest of the world along the democratic route, all of these, you know, all these monarchies and dictatorships. You don't think the world has gotten better?
Well, yeah, but what about the radiation?
What is it with you and radiation, man?
You're talking about like the A-bomb and everything.
What about it?
That'll destroy the world.
Bud, yes, you're right. Have we destroyed the world?
Well, a global warming will.
A global warming will, really? Well, you know what? I think the jury's out on that, man. The point I'm trying to make here is that when we encounter a problem, the human race has generally found a way to solve it, because I look at history, and history teaches me that we've gotten better, we've gotten smarter, we've gotten, we've found better ways of self-government, we've found better ways of spreading the wealth. We actually are so much better as a species than we were, you know, 500 years ago. It blows my mind sometimes, the people who think that the human race is going to hell in a handcart and everything's going to hell, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, okay, say there is an A-bomb.
What about the A-bomb, ma'am? Are you listening to what I'm saying?
I'm just saying, man, if somebody dropped one.
If somebody drops an A-bomb, yeah, that's a bad thing. I submit to you, though, if somebody drops an A-bomb, that's not going to be the end of the world.
Oh, now you don't know. Because of the radiation and everything. You're crazy. Are you serious, guy?
You don't know about the A-bomb.
Are you guys idiots or something? Yes, I know about the A-bomb.
You don't know they can ruin everything.
Yeah, it can ruin everything. And guess what? It ain't so far. It hasn't ruined everything so far. You want to know why? Why do you think that is?
Because the terrorists don't have it.
Because the human race has found a way to contain and control its use. That's why.
Yeah, not for long, though.
Go ahead, man. You keep thinking that, and I'll keep betting the other way, and I'll keep winning.
You think you're going to win about that? I'll take some of that.
You really? You going to be around to collect that, man? I've been right. I've been proven right. I got, like I said, 10,000 years of history behind me. What's he got?
They dropped it on a Japanese.
They dropped it on the Japanese. Is Japan still there?
Barely.
Yeah, barely.
877-877-877-Phil here on a world famous Phil Hendry show. All right, coming up, we're going to tell you 7 reasons your wife or your girlfriend has sex with you. You probably never knew why it is they would actually even consider having sex with you. We'll give you some, at least 7 reasons. And they may not sound right, and you may think I'm lying, but, you know, I'm trying here anyway. And as you'd like to hear him, Mel Gibson, our special in-studio or on-the-phone guest, coming up at the bottom of the hour, 877-876-PHIL, on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry show. Whoopi Goldberg says Mel Gibson is not a racist. On ABC's The View this morning, Whoopi Goldberg defended Mel Gibson against allegations he's a racist after he was allegedly heard using offensive language in an expletive-laden recorded argument with his ex-girlfriend Oksana Grigorieva. And you heard us say the same thing. We didn't need a black woman to tell us that. I'm kidding around, okay?
What do you mean a black woman?
I'm joking around, all right? Don't get it tense. I said I've used the N-word before.
Yeah, I know. I didn't like that either.
I don't care whether you lie. I was being honest, wasn't I? Does that make me a racist? You think I'm a racist, don't you?
No. He doesn't think you're racist. You don't think it really, do you?
I did, but I don't now.
Well, that's the same thing she's saying. Whoopi Goldberg this morning defended Mel Gibson, saying, sure, he uses the N-word, but so do most white people. He's an okay guy. Audio of the fight, which leaked on RadarOnline.com on Friday. Boy, this Radar Online, man, who's their source? And why aren't his legs broken yet? By Harvey Levin. Anyway, featured a voice believed to be Gibson's berating a woman, said to the Russian singer about the way she dresses. He used the N-word, said she was a slut, said she was a whore, said she was a...
I don't like what he did here, but I know Mel, and I know he's not a racist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do. He may be a bonehead.
Well, that language certainly sounds racist to me.
Okay. Well, again, I have had a long friendship with Mel. I just want to clear
that. The point that I want to make out...
Let me finish this, please. Okay. Is that... You can say he's being a bonehead, but I can't sit and say that he's a racist having spent time with him in my house with my kids. I can't say it. And so I really just need to say that.
Okay.
You know, okay. I don't like what he's done. Make no mistake.
And then what did she say?
Can you dig it?
All right. And then...
Do you think he's anti-Semitic?
I think he's an...
Against you, Joy, yeah.
When somebody says to the cop, the police officer, the Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world, that's not anti-Semitic?
You know what, Joy, let me tell you something about drunks.
No kidding.
Drunks say stupid stuff to people all the time. All the time because they're drunk. They're out of control. They're not thinking. They are idiotic. That's why I don't like alcohol. I can't say anything about that because I know what people are like when they're drunk. This rant, I don't think he's drunk on this rant.
Take your stinking paws off me.
Anyway, 877-876-PHIL, what do you think?
I think he's not a racist, but he may be mentally disturbed.
Yeah, I think he has a brain tumor or something. I think it might be a brain tumor.
A brain tumor. Well, anyway, audio of the fight, which leaked to Radar Online, we have some of the clips of that audio. You heard some of it. You heard all of it.
Stay on this phone and don't hang up on me. I have plenty of energy to drive over there. You understand me?
Can you dig it?
All right. I don't want to play that again, okay?
Come on, it's bitching.
I don't want to hear that poor, mentally disturbed bastard screaming and yelling. During the pre-show, we said it, and we'll say it again. He needs to go in for a EEG. Needs to go see the good, great Dr. Hamlin Emery. Get an EEG. I'm serious. Get an EEG. Get the brain waves read. What the hell's going on, right? Find out if those alpha waves are slow. Find out if something's wrong. Then, and that guy that said the whole world's medicated. Let me tell you something, my friend. Why do you think we got drug problems? Because people are looking to medicate themselves, you know.
No, that's... People are using drugs because they're weak.
Yeah. They don't have any character.
That ain't necessarily what it is. People are in pain, man.
Oh, people are in pain.
Oh, I see. So in other words, I'm being a real baby about this, huh?
Yeah, man. You gotta, butch up people in pain. Everybody in pain. Don't mean they're gonna go out and use drugs and everything.
Did you think it was racist of me to play this?
Take your stinking paws off me.
Did you?
No.
All right. So anyway, the African-American ghost star, they had to point out that she's African-American because you may not know that about Whoopi, claims Gibson would have maintained a friendship with her and her children he would not have maintained a friendship with her and her children if he was really racist. Or he may be hanging around to see if she's interested at all if her film career does go south in taking care of the house and the kids over at his place. And she said, I'd be happy to do that. Speaking on her U.S. talk show, The View, on Monday, she says, I don't like what he did here, but I know Mel, and I know he's not a racist. He may be a bonehead. He may be homicidal. He may have a pointy-headed sheet, but he's not a racist. I've had a long friendship with Mel. You can say he's being a bonehead. In fact, the word bone figures quite prominent. Anyway.
Did she say that?
No, she didn't. But Goldberg is quick to clarify. She does not approve of Gibson's alleged behavior in his life. You know what Whoopi said there? She said what we were saying last week. She said what a lot of people are saying. You know, I'm sorry, I hate to break the news, but when certain white guys get angry enough, that word comes flying right out of their mouths. That's just the way it is, and it doesn't mean that the guy is evil. I will tell you, though, I'm not going to stand here and say to you, oh, well, you know, give the guy. You can think anything you want. And if he was like, let's say Mel Gibson wasn't a director or producer. Let's say the guy was the manager of a baseball team. Or he, you know, one of those very vulnerable positions where you can get hired and fired for the least little thing. And he got canned. I would not raise a voice in protest because I would say this. Mel, I know you're probably not a racist. I think you're an angry bastard. I think you're a real piece of garbage, personally. And I wouldn't want to sit down and have a beer with you. But, you know, I kind of understand where you're coming from. And even though I understand your anger, you shouldn't open your yap, man.
Should have watched his mouth.
Yeah, should have watched his mouth, because he knows the world he lives in, man. You know where you live. You know what the game is, man. You know the business you're in. You're in the entertainment. You're the movie business, and you're going to come out with the Jew word here and the N-word there? Are you out of your mind? This guy, I'm telling you, this Gibson, when he got popped for that drunk driving on PCH.
Yeah, he probably thought everybody would... Oh, it's Mel Gibson, man. We better let him go.
He probably did think that. He probably thought he could go screaming ass down PCH with an open bottle of tequila between his legs.
Good thing it was just that.
Good thing it was the only thing that was open between his legs.
Yeah.
And that guy gets pulled over, and he starts ripping on the, whoever it was. Who was it? CHP or something?
I don't know.
He starts popping the CH, this California Highway Patrol guy with the Jew word. And he, you know, and they haul his ass in, and I think it's the somewhere along the line he did a you know, maybe it was Passions of the Christ.
Yeah, I think he did a movie about Jesus, and he thought that, in my opinion, he thought that made him, well, I don't know, like the Catholic Church, would he be a saint or something?
Are you crazy, man? All I did was make a movie.
Yeah, but it was about the Jesus.
What do you mean the Jesus?
Well.
You're telling me because he made that movie, he thought he had elevated himself to some beatified status?
I don't know what that is, but he probably thinks he's, it don't smell. You get your nose right up in it, too.
It don't smell and you can get your nose right up in it, too. That's Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Well, you're probably right. I mean.
I really do, man. I think he thought when he made that movie, he'd hit it out of the ballpark on that one.
Well, guess what? No, he didn't, because after he made that movie, then he goes out with the Jew word, and then he had to go to alcohol rehab, and he had to apologize, all this bull crap. Then he comes out with the N-word, and like the guy said, you ain't going to apologize anymore. So here's what he's got to do, and this is what we said. Number one, and I understand this kind of anger. I understand this kind of anger. It's out of control. It comes from some really deep-seated problems and some bad wiring, not enough sleep, I don't know. You got to get some medication going. Settle all this crap with this girl. Settle all this stuff with your wife. Just get it out of your life, okay? Whatever you got to do, you got to get through it. Then if I were him, I'd take about 6 to 8 months to a year off. Get the hell out of this town. Get out of here. Go somewhere far, far, far away. And then in 10 years, they find the body in ice.
What?
I'm kidding.
Yeah, like what, man? National Geographic?
Yeah, they'll find Mel Gibson frozen in the Alps. No, I don't know. He'll come back. But he's got to take a chill. All right, coming back, as you like to hear him, Mel Gibson, on our very airwaves here next in the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, why'd we spend 15 minutes talking about him if he's going to be here?
Because I felt like it.
That's why. I was feeling about that.
Phil Henry.
Hey, the clock's only 5 seconds off.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome to As You Like to Hear Them. Once a week, we talk with a major newsmaker in the major news stories of the day. And we're very happy to bring on our program here this evening, Mel Gibson, the celebrated director, actor, producer, who has found himself in an extremely difficult position here, I think, in terms of public relations, certainly, Mel, and... In any other way you want to look at it, you've just been dropped by your agency, which was Endeavor, right?
Well, you know, Ed Lamato died, and why would I want to stay with him? you know. But yeah, they dropped me.
And I'm sorry to hear that too.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to hear that. You were over at ICM.
Yeah, I know, and you were there too, and you know.
No, I didn't say anything about me being there too. I didn't say anything about that at all.
Well, you were going to say, oh, hey, you were at ICM just like me, right?
No, I never brought that up at all.
Well, then how do you know who Ed LaMotta is?
Because I read that he was your agent.
And you saw him walking through a Morton Steakhouse once, right?
Yes, okay, yes. God, are you touchy, man?
Hey, I'm touchy. I'm touchy? I got people who are ready to drop me into a tank of sharks and start selling popcorn and put the kids up front and watch me be eviscerated alive by sharks in a shark tank with those big windows on the side. That's what I got going on. I'm touchy. Of course I'm touchy. When people want to watch me be disemboweled by a wild animal for the amusement of children, yes, I'm touchy.
Now, how did you get all the way over to that from what we were just talking about?
Because the stuff I've been hearing you talking about and the stuff I'm hearing other people talking about.
Mr. Gibson, I haven't said anything. In fact, I've defended you. I said that I can understand that kind of anger because I've lived it, but you can't hope for anyone to understand it, really. You can't hope for anybody to be on your side or for anyone to help you win the public relations fight with anger like that. You're just going to have to suck it up.
Why should I suck it up? If she was wrong, okay, if she's wrong...
And what were you arguing about?
It's none of your business.
All right.
If she's wrong, then why can't I say she's wrong?
It was the way you said it. It was the way you said it. And that's why you've got a lot of people who are... Right now, I mean, you're getting people, you get the agency that dropped you. You've got public relations damage, man. How are you going to, what are you going to do?
Well, I got a good lawyer. I got this Blair Burke. Now, I don't know if she's any good at drunk, I mean, she helped me with the drunk driving. I don't know if she's any good with this. It's a tough one.
What happened, man? I mean.
You said it. I got angry. I got angry because I have been working my ass off. I have been paying everybody's bills. I have been putting everybody into houses. I'm putting everybody through school. I'm buying everybody's cars. I'm buying everybody's vacations. Okay? And I'm having to come up with the next brilliant big-time movie to pay for all of this stuff. I got a studio that wants me to make the next big multi-million dollar thing. Now I got an agency that dropped me. They dropped me like I was you. They dropped.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Well, you know what I mean. They dropped me, meaning they don't think they're going to get hurt by that. So what's happened? I'll tell you what's happened. In the middle of what should have been a hot streak for me, I know I made that Apocalypto and a few other stinkers, but the fact is my track record speaks for itself. In the middle of that, this. Now, do I blame myself? Maybe. But,
oh, come on, man. You can't. Tell me about this getting drunk and going down PCH. What was that about?
I was pissed off. And I decided that I would test my celebrity. You were right. I decided to test the limits of my celebrity to see just how far I could push it and not be thrown into prison. And, frankly, I was able to push it a long way. I mean, I was able to get drunk. I was able to have the open container of tequila. I was able to be driving really fast. And I was able to call a cop, I don't know, sugar blankety blank. Yeah, I guess I can't say it right.
I'd rather you not.
And I, you know, went off on Jews, and I was insulting to the female officer. And I got away with a lot. So I tested my celebrity there. Now, that was me testing my celebrity. This latest thing with this Grigoriva, I was just flat pissed off at this skank in my house. And
let's not go down that skank route, because I don't want to, you know, I don't know what this is about, and I'd rather not hear a lot of people called names, okay?
All right, fine. So I was angry, and I was angry at her, and yes, you're right, I feel betrayed. I feel betrayed by a lot of women in my life. I feel betrayed by a mother that didn't stand up to a racist, no good...
Talking about your father?
Yeah. So ever since then, I've just been angry. Now, as I said to you, I'm out there breaking my ass, making all kinds of money for all kinds of people, for agents, for studios... Making money for the guys that are taking my pictures. Making money for actors.
paying for education. I told you the whole thing, right? I got houses in Malibu. I got houses over here. I got houses in the Rocky Mountains at Vail or Aspen. I don't even ski. I don't even ski.
All right, you don't ski.
Well, why would I have a house in the Rockies? I don't even ski.
Well, then sell it or something.
Oh, yeah, in this market? Yeah. Get that one? He says sell it. Sell it in this market. Do you hear what he said? He said
okay, all right, I'm sorry, I misspoke.
He said he misspoke. He said sell it. Oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Sell it. Sell it, huh?
Sell it to some cat who can afford it. Sell it to somebody who can't afford it. Or just leave it empty. Leave it to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field, as John Adams said.
That wasn't John Adams. That was Paul Giamatti.
Sorry. But the point that I'm making here is you sort of made your bed, huh?
Look, when I say to you that I'm under pressure, I'm not saying it the way that that lady said it. I'm saying that I have a lot of problems, okay, that I'm not dealing with very well. I understand that. I'm saying that I have a lot of anger that I'm not dealing with very well. But now it's over because no one cares. No one cares what my problems are. They want to see Mel Gibson burn.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, that's what they want. They want to see Mel Gibson burn.
I don't think that's it at all, Mr. Gibson. I think that people are shocked at your behavior.
No, I think it is that. I think they want to see me burn to the ground. They didn't like the Jew crack. They think I'm a racist. They want to see me burn right straight down to the ground. And then they want to see me blow away, man. They want to see the ashes just blow right across the city line of Los Angeles off into whatever, the Pacific Ocean. They don't want to see me again. I can't blame them.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of embarrassing things, starting with your father's attitudes and leading all up through this. Don't you think you ought to just take a break?
What do you mean, take a break?
Don't you think that you should stop making movies, stop acting, get out of L.A., get out of Los Angeles. Go, I don't know, wherever you feel comfortable. Go back east. Go to Australia. Go up.
What is with Australia? I was born there. It doesn't mean that, you know.
No, but wherever, you know. And get completely out of the movie and filmmaking and acting business and do something else, you know.
Oh, I don't know what that would be.
Well, what else do you like to do?
I like to throw ceramics.
Well, then throw ceramics.
Yeah, throw pottery, you know, kiln. I don't know, but I...
You don't have an agent now?
Well, I got to find an agent. See, that's the problem.
No, you don't have to find an agent at all. Don't find an agent. They drop me. I suck. Leave town, man. Just leave town. You must have some... you've got plenty of income to live on.
You never know.
Well, you must have some of that back-end dough that's still flying in from all of these movies, right?
A little.
So what I would say is get out of town while the getting's good, leave everybody behind, and just do something else. Because, dude, this is all piling up. It sounds like you're losing your mind.
What do you mean?
It sounds like you're cracking up.
What do you mean, cracking up?
Do you remember the thing with that interviewer where you called him an a-hole? And
yeah, because the guy was out of line.
Well, but there are better ways of dealing with those things. It sounds to me like you're flipping your lid. You're cracking up, and you need to just split and, I don't know, maybe never come back. Maybe start making movies somewhere else, like build a studio in Moscow or something. I don't know.
Moscow? What is it with you anyway? Go to Australia, build a studio in Moscow. So I am, in other words, I'm nothing more than Charlie Chaplin, is that it? Let's just go move to Europe. Why don't I move in with Roman Polanski while I'm at it? Hey, there's an idea. I hear he's out. You know, you got me... I realize that I said the N-word, and I realize I said the Jew word, but I didn't exactly molest a 13-year-old.
No, but you did, you know, you admitted to beating this lady. You hit her in the face. You admitted to that on the tape. You also threatened to beat her with a baseball bat.
Oh, come on. You know, Robert De Niro did that in a movie, and the damn flick made over $100 million. I do it, and I'm on the run. I'm on the run. Running me off and burning me out. De Niro did that in a movie.
I know he did it. Well, all I can tell you is, I appreciate you being on the program, but I'm actually kind of bored with this interview.
Oh, well, thanks.
Well, you're welcome, but there's not a whole lot that I can say to you.
Why did you want me on here anyway?
Because I figured nobody wants to interview. I thought I would, but I will tell you that you need to get out of town, and you need to, if you want to beat somebody up, man, You know, if I were you, I would find like a dead body or something, or a punching bag, or anything.
That's your advice.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, this is great, Phil. Thanks very much. I've never been more underwhelmed in my life than to be interviewed by you. And
well, what did you think? You're going to get some answers to your life?
Maybe. Maybe I thought it'd be funny, too. It ain't even that. It's just one pathetic.
That's your life, though, isn't it? Unfunny and pathetic.
Again, remind me, I got to call Whoopi. Thank her for that.
Who are you talking to?
My assistant.
All right, well, good luck, Mel, and see you around, man. But I would tell you something. I really think that you need to...
Yeah, I know. Leave town.
Yeah. As you like to hear, Mel Gibson here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Boy, talk about underwhelming.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Talking to David G. Hall. And we were just talking, David. I saw that movie. We just saw Grown Ups.
Yeah, well, you didn't see the demographic breakout on that. And I was just telling to your audience, I was telling Phil that you've got to be less critical of Adam Sandler. You may not like his movies, but you've got to be way less critical of him.
Well, what are you looking at?
I'm looking at the demographic. They are, you know, Hollywood is doing a lot in terms of the research they did. They got teens. They now have the mentally retarded. And as you might guess, Sandler does well.
And what do you mean the mentally retarded?
You're asking me whether I think Adam Sandler is any good. I tell you, it doesn't make any difference. If you take a look at his demographics, teenagers and people with a head injury, I don't know how else to explain it to you.
They're doing that kind of a demographic breakdown, huh?
That's what I'm looking at here, yes.
People with a head injury.
Yes! God!
You're kidding, man. I'd love to take a look at that.
I'll give it to you after you get off the air. If you want, I'll email it to you.
So Adam Sandler's number one with teens and people with head injuries.
That's what I'm looking at.
All right. David, thank you.
One more thing, Phil.
What?
I'm only kidding. Only kidding.
About the
head injury. See, one of the things about you, you got a real tight...
877-877. Don't tell me. I know I hung up on him, bud.
Yeah, but he's going to be pissed off. What, you hung up on Mr. Hall?
Yeah, I hung up on Mr. Hall. Oh, we did. We went and saw Grown Ups. It made $110 million domestically so far, $30 million production budget. So, you know, Adam Sandler movies do it, man. Now, we went to see the flick because... I like the cast. I saw there's Adam Sandler, and there was Kevin James, there's Chris Rock, and David Spade, you know.
So far, you haven't mentioned one guy that's funny except Chris Rock.
Yeah.
I haven't mentioned one guy that's funny. All right, I'm sorry, but I think, you know what? I may be the only David Spade fan left on Earth. I think he's funny.
Yeah, are you kidding?
He's funny, man. Frankly, he was the funniest guy in the movie, if you want my honest opinion. Oh, and Rob Schneider. Rob Schneider was great. But here's the problem with the movie Grown Ups. All these funny guys, Chris Rock's character was, I don't know what the story is there. The Rob Schneider character was beautifully drawn. The Chris, David Spade character, you know, and maybe it's the actor, what he put into it, I don't know. Kevin James was Kevin James, you know, fat and laughable with the hot wife. Yeah, sure, right. And then there was Chris Rock, who was the black friend, and I never really knew why he was in the movie.
Because they got to get a black guy in it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's why. They had to get a black guy. In other words, it was a Gen X nostalgia movie for Gen Xers, for people that were in grade school in the late 1970s, that were on their way into high school in the late 1970s. Kind of the Gen X people, that was, am I right about that? Yeah. That was their movie. And, all the music was from the late 70s. And, oh, God, I'd almost forgotten how lousy the music was back then. But the theme was, these are these parents, the fathers especially, the women, once again, are not very interesting or they're pieces of ass. Like, for instance, Selma Hayek. Why is she in this movie? I'll tell you why.
Yeah, because she's there. Are you kidding? You don't know why?
Well, I mean, you know, Adam Sandler's wife has got to be some Latin, well, I guess so.
Hey, man, he's a star of the movie. He'd have anybody you want.
All right, and then Maria Bello, and I don't know who the hell else. But anyway, so these fathers want to teach their kids, especially the rich kids of Adam Sandler's character, who's a film producer, he's an agent, a very wealthy agent, and he lives in this huge home, and they're stinking rich, but he's a great guy, he's a normal guy, and he wants his kids to know what it's like to be, you know, normal kids, because they're on their little video games, and they're texting the nanny to bring them chocolate milk and stuff like that. That's the joke. And he wants his kids to know what it's like to swing on a rope swing and to go on a hike and to paddle boats in the river, you know. And as it turns out, the weekend that they spend at this lake, that's what the dads wind up doing, and gradually they get the kids interested in it. So it's one of these very feel-good movies, but, I got to tell you something, man. I felt sort of manipulated by the flick, you know, like
maybe somebody's fondling you, right?
Yeah, like I was being fondled. What do you mean, like I was being fondled?
Well, what do you mean manipulated?
I didn't say manipulated, did I? I just felt like somebody was punching all the, quote, right buttons, you know. Here's my black friend, and I'm a rich guy, but I'm a good guy. And does this remind you of The Big Chill? Well, it sort of is, only for Gen Xers and with kids. Okay, and, you know, like that, man. So,
what was The Big Chill?
The Big Chill is a baby boomer nostalgia movie. That was my generation. Okay, and now this grown-ups, I don't know, but I'm just telling you. Now, David says that Adam Sandler's number one with people with head injuries. Let me tell you something. That guy, among teenagers, at least he was, all that Billy Madison, all that jazz.
Yeah, Happy Gilmore.
All of that stuff scored huge with, like, young males. Hey, man, they got money, too. So I don't know, but that was the flick that we saw. Now, here are some of the other movies that kicked ass or did not at the box office. Now, as I mentioned, Grown Ups. It says here Grown Ups did this weekend $16.4 million. I don't know where Jason's getting this. Oh, so far it's done $110. It's actually done $111 total. Last week it was number three. It's dropped to number six. Now, number one, Despicable Me. It's the new 3D cartoon featuring the voice of Steve Carell as a bumbling supervillain. It stole the top spot at the weekend box office, dropping Eclipse to second place. Eclipse is second. Third, Predators. Fourth, Toy Story 3. Fifth, The Last Airbender. Sixth, Grown Ups. Seventh, Day and Night. Eighth, The Karate Kid. Ninth, The A-Team, which was fifth last week. A-Team's made $74 million. It made $2 million this weekend. And 10th, Cyrus. Just about every movie on this list sucks.
Are you kidding me, man? What do you mean it sucks?
Every movie on this list is jive-ass. All right. So that's the kind of summer it's going to be, man. What do you want me to tell you?
You know, just because a bunch of comedy and everything like that doesn't mean it's bad.
Oh, it sucks. It's mostly kid movies. That's fine. I can live through it. I'll just survive, man. It doesn't make any difference. All right, as far as books go, the hardcover fiction, I know you guys are paying attention to this, huh?
Yeah.
Private, Sizzling 16, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, The Overton Window, and The Help. In nonfiction, S. My Dad Says, Medium Raw, The Big Short, Chelsea, Chelsea, Bang, Bang, and Spoken from the Heart. Oh, man. That's nonfiction. Now, one of the things about books you have to understand, your book can get on the top five or the top 10 of the New York Times bestseller list if you go out and buy a bunch, you know. So if you go out and you buy a bunch of movies, you go out and buy a bunch of your own books, then you can actually jack it on the...
You kidding me, man? Like if you have a warehouse of them?
You go out and just buy a warehouse full of books, yeah. All right, world-famous Phil Henry Show, produced by Jason Rantz, our technical director, Charles Wagon. And, of course, we have screening tonight, John Wernick filling in. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Get a BSP today. Later.
Phil Henry.